Hello, welcome back to Coach Enya Below the Bar podcast. So this week I have a special guest on. So this podcast is called Below the Bar for a reason because it does cover everything else outside of fat loss but contributes to fat loss, number one being the mindset. The mind has to change before the body does, all right? I love this quote. You can't open new doors with old habits, all right? You have to change the habits to open new doors. You have to change the behavior to get a different result. And you need to be mentally resilient to, you know, get yourself through a physical fat loss transformation because it's not for the faint-hearted. It requires a lot of discipline, consistency, and patience. But the mindset in general, I'm fascinated by it. And the reason I have David on today is because he had to use his mindset in a different capacity, and that was through active addiction. So David lived through addiction for 5 years. He was addicted to cocaine and he came out the other side. And he's now 3 years sober and he's a personal trainer and he's helping other people change their lives. And I just have so much respect for anyone who doesn't give up and, you know, decides it has to change. Something has to change here. I either go one way or I go the other. And, you know, David saw light at the end of the tunnel and he turned his whole life around. And he had to become mentally resilient to do that. Like he had to go through that battle internally by himself because no one else can do it for you. You have to put the work in. And to come out the other side of an addiction over 5 years, deep addiction, to be 3 years sober now and, you know, just a totally different person. He has a fiance, he has a great life now, and he just looks so much more happier. And I just want people listening who might know someone who's gone through something like that, whether it be a family, a friend, a partner, a family member, a friend or a partner, and or you might be going through it yourself. It doesn't have to be drugs that you're addicted to. It could be gambling, it could be shopping, it could be food. But I just want you to hear David's story that, you know, when he was in the pits of addiction, he was able to turn his life around and there is hope, okay? So I'm delighted that he was able to share his story with me on this episode because it is very personal and I have a lot of respect for him for opening up to my listeners. But I think a lot of people are going to gain something from this, whether it be from, you know, in terms of their own life or someone that they know. So yeah, let's jump into it. So David, how are you? Thanks for coming on the podcast today.
No problem. Great to meet you. How are you?
I'm good. So I came across you, David, I think it was a radio interview. You know the way they put up clips of like radio interviews online and stuff? And you were telling your story. Were you talking, was it 2FM that you were on or was it news talk?
It was on RT. It was on a few radio stations, but the one that got clipped was with Jennifer Zamparelli.
That was the one that I seen, yeah, RT2FM. And I seen it. And do you know what resonated with me, Dave, is that I have people in my life, whether it be friends, family, friends of friends, that are currently going through what you used to go through. And I think anyone can relate to that because whether you're going through it yourself or know someone who's going through it, everyone can relate to that conversation because there is an epidemic of, like, you know, addiction in this country when it comes to cocaine. Like, so I wanted to get you on and how you overcame that battle. But first, I want to start with, just tell us a bit about yourself. Like, what was life growing up? Well, first of all, what are you doing now? You're a personal trainer now, and you obviously, that's obviously helping you stay on the straight and narrow. But how you got to that point, we're going to, like, rewind and tell us a bit about growing up, the area you grew up in, and how you kind of got into it all. What was school life like? What were your friends like?
Yeah, so I'll start with school life. And anyway, so I was a big, huge messer. I was very smart, but I just hated school because basically they were just teaching things that I had no interest in. And that's the pity about school. It's just like everyone is painted with a one brush. Like, and if you're not good at something, like, you're made to feel like very stupid. And it's actually a very good quote. We only learned it the other day. And it's, if you judge a fish on its ability to climb a tree, it'll forever live its life thinking it's stupid. And that's the way it is there. It's because they don't really go to your strengths. It's just like, here's the criteria. You're either good or not. But I was very interested in history and I was very interested in PE. So we absolutely excelled at that. But like I said, I was a huge messer. I wasn't really into school. And then at the start of fifth year, I was asked politely to leave or you're going to be getting expelled. And anyway, so that was that. And then looking back at it, I would have been like a real, now this is just looking back in hindsight because I do a lot of self-reflection these days. And I would have been like a very big attention seeker. And I think that was just a takeaway from my own insecurities, you know. Like, I hate how I looked. Like, I had real bad teeth. I had real big ears. I was very skinny. So me being the big funny man and getting the attention, that was just a way to sort of, like, draw all that attention away from me. And then I went on from being politely asked to leave school. I went on to the outreach. And that's where sort of the bad kids go kind of thing. And then I got all my VTECs, and straight on from that, I just went into just working, just like dead-end jobs. And there's nothing wrong with, if you're working a job and you're providing for yourself, you're providing for your family, there's nothing wrong with it. But these were, met some really nasty people working in some of these jobs, especially when you don't have qualifications, you're in with some bad people. But growing up, had a very good childhood. Like, I have the best man and dad in the world, still do, very supportive. All I've ever done was just play football. Me and mates, all we ever done was just play football. And then, you know, yourself, like, when you grow up, the friends that you have, they start, like, meeting other friends. Like, let's say they get involved in sports and they have friends in sports. And then people start falling into the wrong crowds. But I sort of always had football to look at. And I'm not going to lie to you and say I was a very smart young fella. And that's how I didn't go down the road that some of my friends did. It was just by pure chance that I didn't get involved in, like, drugs, gangs, crime, stuff like that. It's just because when you're a kid, you're not thinking for yourself. It's just group mentality. Whatever your friends are doing, you're going to be doing. And yeah, I was just very, very lucky to just not end up the way some of them are now, with just no future ahead of them whatsoever, you know?
And I totally really. And I think sometimes when it comes to, I said this quote on another podcast, it was actually with Ciara Rossi. You know, the messers that were down the back of my classroom, like, just because they weren't in honours maths, or they weren't in honours English or honours Irish, you know, like, they might have been in foundation maths, they might have just been in ordinary English, ordinary Irish. I don't know whether they had a foundation Irish. I think they did. I don't know.
They've done foundation maths.
Yeah, but, like, do you know what? They're the people now that your ma go to, like, your ma would go to if she was looking to get her kitchen done up, or she needed, like, a light bulb fixed, or, like, you know, needs an electrician. Just because someone isn't good in an academic sense when it comes to school doesn't mean they're not good in a practical sense. Like, them lads that were messing around the back of the class, like, they're the people you'd go to if you were doing a woodwork exam, be like, hey, will you help me with this? Will you help me with this spice rack? Like, they were clued in with stuff like that. You know, they were very good with their hands, or they were very creative, or, like you said, they probably excelled in PE. And I think that point is very good that you made about the fish. It's like, they were made feel that if they weren't good at something, then they weren't good at anything.
Exactly.
Or they couldn't be good at anything, you know. And when you're growing up in school and you have to go through 6 years of that, you're failing this, you're failing that. Like, isn't it no wonder that some people end up leaving, or some people just believe, oh, well, do you know what? I'm not good at anything, so I'll just end up selling drugs.
Exactly. You're made to believe that there's something wrong with you, like.
I think the approach to, like, even the leaving cert and stuff, there definitely has to be something done about it. Like, whether it's, you know, introduce something where you can excel at something you're good at, or, you know, practical exams where you actually use your hands, where it's an ongoing assessment rather than a memory test, you know, once every 3 years, I think, you know, the junior cert, the leaving cert. So then I kind of want to talk to the next question I had is, how did you actually get into taking drugs then, you know? Because what age are you actually?
42.
Yeah, so I'm 21. So when I started going out, when I was 18, 19, like, I was like a novice. Like, there wasn't any of that around us. It maybe just came down to the group that I hung around with, but it wasn't in my face or anything. It wasn't until my mid-20s that I started seeing people around me when I was out and stuff, that I started hearing about it and then seeing it and stuff.
Yeah, so same.
Yeah, so obviously it was your mid-20s when it started, was it?
Probably about 24, 25, because, like, I spent about 5 years in, like, very bad addiction. And I'm going to be honest with you, it's like, I'm still trying to piece, like, the jigsaw back together, because I was literally, like, using every day for 5 years. So it's just like I was on autopilot for 5 years, you know what I mean? So I couldn't even tell you how old, probably 24 or 25 when I started doing it. And that was just because growing up, like I said, football was my entire life. Now, I wasn't a professional, but it was like, it was the only thing I was good at, and people were praising me for it, and all my friends were just football, and I tore my ACL and cartilage, and I'd done a few other things to my knee, and I just couldn't play football anymore, and I wasn't really crazy into the gym then. I was just on and off for it, and I just literally didn't know what to do, and then everyone was friends with, like, just sort of stopped talking to them. And it sounds like a stupid reason to people, like, I got into addiction because, like, I couldn't play football anymore, but it was like, it was more than that. It was like the loss of community. And I just didn't know what to do. And then I couldn't even tell you when I started using it. It was probably, I think it was like how everyone else starts with everyone. They're in nightclubs and they're using it. But then quickly, like, I thought that that was like sort of like filling like a hole for me, like that was missing. But like in actual sense, it was actually just digging that hole deeper and wider. And yeah, it was just straight away I realized like with the alcohol, like I never was a big drinker. Alcohol was never for me, but it was just the cocaine, the way you do one sniff, it hits you instantly and you're just numb. But now at the start, it was enjoyment and all, but then I quickly snowballed from like doing it on a Friday to doing it on a Saturday to quickly, it was just like no alcohol, 5 years of every single day, just dry sniffing cocaine. And that was just basically just because I didn't know how to deal with my emotions. I didn't know how to deal with what I was going through. And like I said, all I had was football. I was never into the things that I'm into now, like hiking, sea swimming, meditating, all that. It was just football. And then when that was gone, and all my friends were gone, that was just like my way of sort of just like numbing myself, you know?
I talk about it a lot on my stories, and you know, the likes of alcohol and drugs and stuff like that, it is like artificial dopamine. And look, I know everybody has a few casual drinks and can go out the weekend and maybe they don't suffer from addiction and they can do it in moderation and enjoy it. But I do think like alcohol and drugs, like cocaine, it's artificial dopamine. And then I always harp on about, but you can get that same feeling that lasts you longer and it's nearly free by going out hiking, you know, going to the gym, doing things that make you feel better. But the thing is that people that get caught up in addiction, they are doing that and they're not aware of that, you know, they're just chasing the next high and they're like, this is actually blocking out the pain. And it's only when they start sobering up, it starts hitting them again and then they start doing it again. And is that how it felt for you? Like,
yeah, exactly. Look, you're just like on a roundabout, like, and you do feel like addiction is just so powerful, and it's just like something has a grip on you. And like still to this day, like I don't know, like I'm surprised I got out of it, just because like how bad I was. Like it's so hard to explain to someone that's not going through it. Because like I remember even like just being very judgmental and very naive. If I was in town and you'd see someone, I'd be like, oh, look at that junkie or whatever. And then it's just now after going through that, and you actually understand just how powerful it is, because it does like, it rewires your brain, like it messes with your head. So like, and then just before you know it, you're locked in, because that's what it does. It releases all this dopamine into your brain. It changes the reward system in your head. And just before you know it, you're in and you can't get out. And what turns into a casual thing just turns into an everyday thing, and then turns into like, you just cannot see a way out of it. Like it is such a hard thing to get out from.
I suppose you kind of have to have a sense of self-awareness eventually. You're like, this is getting out of control. But like, how long did it, obviously 5 years you said you were in active addiction, but along the way, like, were there people saying to you like, hey, are we very good at hiding it? Or was there people in your life, like your friends and family, like how did they react to this? Could they start to see signs and stuff?
Yeah, so like when it came to me, it wasn't it, like, especially because like I wasn't going to the pub, like I was locked in my bedroom with the curtains pulled, and like I'm the type, when I done it, like there's no hiding it, like my eyes are huge, I can't talk, I can't like sit down, and constantly moving. So like there was no hiding it at all. And it was a blessing and a curse in a way. Like it was a curse because like it destroyed my family. Like even my ma would be like afraid to come into my bedroom in case I was dead. Like she didn't know what was going on. But then it was a blessing in a way, because like I really saw that, right, I have no friends, because not one of them were there for me. They were going around talking bad about me to other people and all this was getting back to me. So that, like, obviously it was hard at the time, but it's a blessing now, because like it's better to be in no company than bad company, and I was very happy to see their true colors. But the worst thing is, like, only recently I sort of forgave myself for like what I put my family through. And this is like, I'm like clean over 3 years now, but it is so horrible, because like I know that the guy knocked a few years off my family's life just from like pure stress, just getting up, leaving the house at 4 a.m, coming home like after getting stuff like it is horrible. But I just it's what I had to go through to get to me where I am now, and I'm just so happy that I get to make up to my family now for the rest of my life, you know.
Just imagine though today, like how peaceful your parents sleep and your family sleep and your close friends sleep, knowing that you're clean 3 years, like that would make me, that would give me a sense of dopamine in a nutshell, you know.
It does though. Like I went like so long with no money. Like even when I got like off drugs, I was paying the debt off for like a year and a half it took me. And like that's once that's so every month I was paying like 2 grand or over 2 grand a month. So like I had no money. Like and this is me being sober. So like it was just horrible. And even today, like I bought my girlfriend a present that gave me my 50 euro, and I'm like I don't need that. And like sharing is what like makes me happy now. Do you know what I mean? But it's just like it's deadly. It's just like a big complete 180. And especially when you're in a place that like you can't see tomorrow, and now you're in a spot where you're planning for the future. Like it's the most amazing feeling in the world. And that's why every single day I remind myself of it. And that's like practicing gratitude, you know.
Oh, totally. Gratitude. I wake up some days and I look at, like, you know, the telly on my wall, and like a flat screen telly that I bought a few years ago. And I remember, like, where I didn't know whether I had bus fare to get into town to a meeting, you know. And it's little things like that. Like I always say, financial freedom isn't, you know, flashy Lamborghinis or big mansions. It's the ability to be able to like look after your family, or be able to go into a shop and buy a coffee without looking at the price and stuff, you know, little things like that. Like that's major gratitude. And then just to kind of circle back, what were some of the excuses that you would make up to yourself to kind of, you know, stay in addiction? Was there that kind of devil on one shoulder, angel on the other? Oh, you know, but this is making you feel good. If you go off, you're gonna feel shit. Like, was there that type of like brainwashing?
Yeah, so like I honestly can't remember the times when I was doing it and enjoying it. Like I cannot, because it just happened so fast for me that I fell into it. So like I can remember I never got a buzz when I done the coke. It was like the dealer texted me, I'll be there in 10 minutes. And I'd be like, that's where I got real excited. Do you know what I mean? But then as soon as I got that bag, like, and I done that first sniff, like, I'd be crying. And I'm like, why are you doing this? Because I knew, right, I'm going to be paranoid. Like, so paranoid. Like, I went through with drugs, psychosis and everything. Like, I'm going to be paranoid. I'm going to be depressed. Like, I'm going to be suicidal. And I still couldn't stop myself from doing it. And then as soon as that bag was gone, I'm trying to get another bag. I'm trying to get another bag. And then, like, before you know it, like, I owed out 40,000 euro. And it's just crazy. Like, and then you were saying there about, like, there's, like, rock bottoms. So, like, I had so many rock bottoms. Like, so many. Like, the amount of times, like, I would lie in bed during the middle of the night with my eyes wide open and my alarm going off at work. That is the worst feeling in the whole. I get goosebumps and all, even still thinking about it. And then there was one time I went up to a motorway near my job, and I sat on the side of the motorway, like trying to get the courage up, like to run out in front of a truck. There was like other times, like I'd get on my bike, I'd cycle around the area, and I'd be like, where could be a good place that could kill myself? So like maybe a little kid won't find me, maybe someone walking their dog would. And none of that even made me change. Like, and they are like rock bottoms, and none of that made me change. And then it was just literally one day I was off work, and I was doing it for, I think it was like 5 nights straight, and I got loads of it in, and I was doing it for 5 nights straight. And like I said this before, this is the last day I used, and I woke up the next day, whatever time it was, and I was just looking at myself in the mirror, blood all over my face after coming out of my nose. I was looking for coke on my floor because it ran out that night, and I found little bits of coke on the ground. But my whole nose was just like scabbed and blocked up and all. And I got a screwdriver out of my tail bag and stabbed up my nostrils to get like an airway. And I was just dropping the coke into my nose. It was falling out. There was blood everywhere. And the next day I woke up, and I remember looking at myself in the mirror with blood all over me. And that was like the first time that I could see myself. I was like the first time that I properly recognize the damage that I'm doing to everyone's lives around me. And that was the last day I used. That was the 4th of May, 2021.
Jesus. Yeah, that's like a wake-up call.
I know, but like even before that, like sitting on a motorway, like wanting to jump out in front of a truck, like that didn't change me. Like I was suicidal every day. Like I used to talk to myself every day. Like all I'd say to myself over and over again is kill yourself. Kill yourself, kill yourself, kill yourself. Because I was actually trying to like brainwash myself into doing it, because I was so scared to do it, but I wanted to do it. Like it's complete insanity. Like, and there's so many people going through the same thing that I went through, or if not worse. Like it's just getting worse and worse and worse and worse. And the people that are using are getting younger and younger and younger.
I don't know what I'd do if I was growing up now. If I was only like, you know, 17, 18, I have a feeling that, you know, if my friends probably would be using at that stage now, you know, if I was growing up, and or who knows, maybe even me. And it's scary. Like, it's scary because it's actually so normalized. And you know what? Sometimes when I'm on TikTok, like, videos will pop up, like, whether it be just going out, like, in a nightclub, like, someone take, you know, piss take videos and stuff. And then, like, videos like that pop up in my time, like, taking the piss out, like, doing a bag on a night out. And I'm, like, looking at that and I'm, like, people are actually making jokes out of this. But, like, that, there's actually a massive issue in this country with that. And, like, people are normalising it. And do you know what it is? There's people, like, how you used to be, Dava. And they're looking at videos like that and they're like, oh, well, everybody else is doing it. And that's the attitude in this country as well. And I know we'll probably circle back to it near the end of the podcast, but that's the attitude in this country, is that it's so normalized that people are probably making up excuses now, thinking, oh, well, I'm not the only one who does it. Sure, everyone does it. It's part of the culture now, you know?
Yeah, that's exactly the way it is. Like you said about them skits on TikTok about people doing coke. And if you go on to it, like, there's thousands of comments of people relating to that video, like, thousands.
Laughing at it, like.
Yeah, laughing at it, like, they don't, like, but that's the way, it's just, like, lots of people these days just do not think for themselves. It's just a group herd mentality. That's what that person is doing, that's what everyone is doing, so I have to do it. And it's just, like, it's just nobody thinking for themselves. But, like, exactly like you said, the way drinking alcohol in Ireland is normalised, doing cocaine in Ireland is now normalised. And it's like, if someone asks you, do you want to sniff, and you say no, it's like they're looking at you, like, what's wrong with him?
I went to the gym when I was on holiday, right? And people would look at me and think I'm obsessed with exercise and that there's something wrong with me. But if I sat around a pool all day getting pissed, that's normal. Like, that's acceptable. It's just, it's some people's mentality are just, like you said, the herd mentality in this country. But do you know what? From speaking to a couple of lads, like, just over the past year or so, like, whether it be, you know, out and about on a night out or whatever. And, you know, there's a couple of lads that I know who don't do it and their friends do. And I'm like, they tell me, because I know that my friends do because it gives them the confidence to talk to girls, because they don't have confidence even with drink on them, you know. And do you think that is, it's obviously peer pressure is a factor, but do you think confidence is a, you know, false confidence, I suppose, is why they do it, to get that feeling?
Maybe at the start, but now I just think it's just because everyone's doing it, so they're doing it. Like, if you went out with, like, five lads, there's at least three of them that are going to be doing it. But that's what the way it is now. But, like, when I first started, like, I can remember doing it just because exactly my friends had it. And I remember, like, I was very confident. I was talking a lot. I was in the right venue. It was like a hurricane just ripping through the place, going around. So it does give you that confidence and does give you that. But, like, I'd be just down, like, I'd be out, go watch matches, and I'd see people on it, and they're sitting there, and their faces are going like that, and it's, like, where is the, like, there's no enjoyment in it. But I do think it starts that way, where it does give you, like, a euphoria type of feeling, but then the more you do it, it's just so hard to get out of it. Like, and that's, I was absolutely blessed, like, that my addiction was so severe, because, like, I had to take action. It was either, you have to stop this now, or you're going to die. Where you have people now that think they don't have a problem, who actually have a worse problem than I had, that are just going to continue to do it every weekend until they're 50, 60 years of age, and just they're in such self-denial about it.
I think denial is a big one as well. And that was the next point I was going to say to you about lads who say, oh, I'm not addicted, I only do it on a Friday night. But, and that thing that you mentioned earlier on about, it's, I remember hearing this in a podcast before as well, it's not doing the cocaine that they're addicted to, it's the feeling of texting the dealer, having it in their pocket, going on the night out, getting excited about doing it, like, that's the feeling that they chase, similar to gamblers, like, putting the money on the race. It's not the actual winning, it's the watching it and, you know, being in the bookies, that's what gives them the buzz. But what would you say to lads who, because I see actually there's a lot of people who make TikTok videos about, like, how they overcame addiction, and then you see in the comment section, it's like, oh, like, chill out, will you, like, people can go out and do it in moderation and stuff, like, what's your opinion?
I get abuse on TikTok, it's crazy. It is.
I think that's a people with insecurities, though, to be honest, Dave, or they're looking at themselves in the mirror, you know.
Ah, I don't take it to heart at all. I actually get a bit of amusement out of it, so it doesn't bother me whatsoever, you know.
Do you think, though, that people are in denial about do you think that someone can do that in moderation if they're doing it every Friday night, like, they have to get it, if they're going for a few points, or, you know, that kind of mentality, and I'm not going to do it this weekend, and then the fourth drink hits, because they are linked. It's your brain, sir. I remember listening to podcasts like this before and reading about it. your brain thinks, okay, you have alcohol in which unit, you have alcohol in your system now, and it starts to correlate cocaine and alcohol together. So it's like, you need to get cocaine now.
Yeah, and I think alcohol and cocaine together, I think that creates a different substance or something like that that's actually very dangerous. But 100% sure, I know people who actually go out, like, to have a drink, and that's their excuse for coke. Like, they actually want to do coke, but, like, they don't want to look like a mad thing doing coke on its own. So they go to the pub, get the points, and then they can use the coke. Like, I actually really don't believe that people know, like, actually how bad it is. Like, it is so bad. And, like, I know I'm not in that little world anymore, but because, like, I share my story on TikTok and stuff like that, like, I have people messaging me daily, and then, like, there's people in my area that I know that are, like, very, very bad. But, like, at the end of the day, if you're doing some, like, any drug, like frequently, like, you have a problem. Like, you should be able to deal with reality yourself, you know.
I know. And I just want to actually ask, like, how, for anyone listening who might be going through, or has, you know, a brother, a sister, a friend, a cousin that's going through it, like, what was your first step then when you looked in the mirror and you said something has to change here? Like, how did you go about actually changing? Like, what was your mindset shift like?
Yeah, so, like, my family straight away, like, I was very, like, broke up, like, physically and mentally. Like, I wasn't really capable of doing anything for myself, so my family reached out and they got me a drugs counselor. So I went, seen this drugs counselor. I'm actually still very good friends with her now, still to this day. And I just talked to her on the phone once a week, but that honestly wasn't enough. And unfortunately for me, when I tried to get clean, this was during, I think it was the fourth lockdown or the second lockdown. So they tried to get me into rehab. There was no beds available for me. Then they were trying to go to meetings, but there was no meetings. The only meetings were online. So, and I've done one online meeting and I just didn't like it. It wasn't for me. But I sort of just had to take matters, like, into my own hands. So I just started, like, reading books. There's no word of a lie. I listened to at least 3 podcasts a day for 1 year straight. And that was just on cocaine, addiction, learning about your mind. And then I was like, right, I was trying to just think of all these, like, solutions to, like, how am I going to get out of this? And that's when I just got real into fitness, hiking, nature. Sea swims actually releases more dopamine than a bump of cocaine, just for anyone out there diving diving the sea. But I just got huge on self-development, self-improvement, and I just became obsessed with it. And I think for anyone who's in recovery and you're trying to, like, give up addiction, like, you need to pick up something that's going to take up, like most of your time, you know. And then that's just where, like, fitness came in for me, the sea swimming, the hiking. Like, you just have to stay busy. So if you're someone and you want to go to meetings or something like that, like, go to a few meetings. Like, you have to, like, you just have to use your time wisely. And I just, like, I remember, like, I was, like, so broken, and I used to walk around singing all day. And my mom's like, geez, you're very happy today. And I wasn't even singing because I was happy. I was singing so I couldn't hear that little voice in my head that was telling me to, like, get drugs. Like, that, and it's crazy. It's just crazy, yeah.
You just have to take it. Like, I always hear this about, like, you know, alcoholics and stuff like that, or even anyone with an addiction. You have to just take it one day at a time. You can't be thinking, you know, oh, how am I going to feel in a week's time if this is how I feel today?
Yeah, that's where everything in life, though, anything you're trying to get past, reach, or achieve, just take it one day at a time.
And then you obviously, I do agree with you channeling, like, that addiction into something that's going to benefit you, because my partner actually was a gambling addict, and, you know, he owed out loads of money. It didn't get that bad now, where, like, you know, his family had to come in and try to take over the debt and stuff like that. But he still has friends who are in active addiction when it comes to gambling and stuff, you know. And he taught to himself, I'm going to destroy my relationship. I'm going to, how did he used to feel again? He described this. He said that he would spend all his money. He would wake up then and he'd be depressed because he had no money. Then he'd be borrowing money so he could go and bet. And then when he got his wages, then he'd owe it all out again. And then he'd have to borrow. Oh, it's a toxic cycle, you know?
Yeah. You're just, like, on a never ending roundabout. Like.
And there's only so much that train can keep circling before it starts running out of steam. And in fairness now, fair play to you, David, because it was either, like you said, going to end one way where you're either going to end up dead, or you actually kind of opened your eyes and said something has to change here. And then you obviously have a fiance now, don't you?
Yeah, I keep calling her my girlfriend. Like, it just sounds mad saying fiance. Like.
And how did was she with you, or did she come after?
No, she came after it. Could have done more when I was going through it, though, to be honest. But at least she's not getting the best of me now. Anyway.
I know. Do you know what? And in fairness, David, like, there's actually relationships out there where, and there could be women listening to this now, and their other half has gone through it, or you know, there could be men listening to this, and there's a big problem with women as well, because women drink at home a lot when it comes to wine, and you know, women are starting to lean on cocaine so they can stay up later and stuff like that, and it's so sad because so many people are doing it in secret, David, and like, I'm sure there's a portion of people listening to this that are going through it, you know, and I think this is going to benefit them massively, but. Would you have any advice for someone who is going through it now? You know, obviously you're 3 years sober, but I'm sure it's still like, you know, it's still a seed in your head every day. But what advice would you give to someone who's currently going through it or has a family member or a friend going through it, you know?
So for anyone that is going through it, like, just reach out and ask for help as soon as possible. Because, like, trust me when I say it, like, you cannot do it alone. Like, you need help. That is the first step. And then just try everything. Like, go to meetings, get into a 12-step program, join a gym. You have, like, swap a negative with a positive, something that's going to take up your time, something that you're going to set goals and try to achieve goals. And then just, like, I'd be real big on, like, visualization. So, like,
Same.
think where you want. I pictured, when I was in addiction, I pictured myself in great shape and new teeth, jogging down my road with my top off, and I've done that. So that was one of my goals. And anyway, but visualization is absolutely huge. But you have to reach out for help. Like, it's never going to get better until you reach out for help. And then, just for anyone that's going through, like, like a family member that's concerned, the horrible thing is, like, you literally cannot do anything for anyone until they reach out for help. Like, all you can do is, like, love them, care for them, support them. But what I will say, because I know, like a lot of mammies and all, like, reach out to me all the time, is, like, also, most importantly, like, take care of yourself.
I know, because it can destroy you trying to take care of someone else. But like that's a great point, and it applies to all addiction. They have to want to do it, because you know I've plenty of people in my family, extended family, that go through addiction, whether it be alcohol, gambling, or something else. And it's like everyone tries to like, oh, and you're going to this meeting tonight, and that's it, and that's the end of it. But unless they actually go and do it themselves and they want to do it, it's just they're just going to end up back at square one in a couple of weeks. They mask it, you know, to please everyone else. But if they're not doing it for themselves, like
Yeah.
it's not going to end well.
Like, I had a counselor before me, other counselor, and she was saying, right, we have a meeting 10 o'clock in the morning tomorrow. And then I just stopped going. And then she just said, right, give me a ring whenever you're ready, and just cancelled all the future meetings we had. Because she knew herself. She's like, if you're not ready, if you don't want it, I'm wasting my time here. Like, you just have to want it.
And I think that visualization thing that you mentioned, just to kind of bring it back to fat loss, David, is a lot of people probably think as well when they have bad habits when it comes to food. Like you're a personal trainer now, so you obviously, you know, here I deal with clients a lot, and you know, you've probably been on the other side of that as well, been a client yourself. But the visualization thing is key, because when you are in like bad habits of constantly snacking all the time, or you lean on food, people can be addicted to food as well, you
Oh,
know.
mate, everything, yeah.
You know, the whole visualization thing, because I had it too. Like I pictured myself with good arms, in shape, and you know, the healthiest I've ever been, the fittest I've ever been, because like I said, I used to be a lazy bitch. I used to be a binge drinker. And when you're back then, you don't see it. You don't
Ah.
see it until you've overcome it. You're like, you look back and like, how did I ever live like that? I actually forget what it was like to just snack constantly. Or you know, I try to make videos about it, but I can't remember like how many times I used to eat a biscuit a day, or you know, just not eat solid meals and stuff. And that's all you know, because you've grown up like that, you know. And then I think that kind of thinking, oh, I can't change, that kind of what would you call it, that all or nothing approach, where it's
Yeah,
like,
it's a negative mindset. And the thing is, like, if you believe that, well, then it's true.
yeah, what you constantly tell yourself. And that
100%.
has to change too, because I'm sure when you were in active addiction, you were saying to yourself, it's always going to be like this, it's never going to change.
Yeah, 100%. So, like, all I wanted to do was, like, was die. That's the gone truth. That's all I wanted to do. And I was trying to do it by, like, using so much cocaine. Because I'll be honest with you, I was afraid to actually do it. And that's why I was said to you, like, I was saying to myself every day, just kill yourself, because I was just trying to get my mind to do it. And then, yeah, it's crazy. And that's what I do. Like, even though it's, like, been over 3 years, I do get real emotional. Like, and that's why, like, I actually had to stop doing talks because like it actually brings me back to them days, like, and I just want to have a laugh and a joke now, do you know what I mean? Like, it's like, I get away from that now, and then like every talk I've done is start crying my eyes out and all, and it's just like, yeah, just look, it is the only time you should ever look back in life is to see how far you came, and you know, I'm glad to do that now.
I think just to wrap the podcast up, Dave, I think like you are living proof that you can change, like no matter how many rock bottoms you hit or how deep in it you are, you can change, but it has to start with self-belief and you have to believe that you can change. I think that's where it has to start, you know, because if you, like you said, keep telling yourself it's not going to get any better, it's always going to be like this, then that's always what's going to happen. If you keep degrading yourself, you're worthless, you're this, you're that. It has to change somewhere. But I think listening to podcasts, like you said, reading books, rather than depending on other people to say it to you, you know, like whether it be family or friends, because at one stage, I'm sure you just become blind to that. You're just like, you know,
in one ear, straight out the other.
You have to do it for yourself. But I'm delighted to have you on now. And you're a personal trainer and you work with other people to try change their lives. But obviously when it comes to a physical standpoint, but I'm sure you can definitely help them from a mental standpoint as well.
I do, and that's why like I have plenty of people that are with me now that are in recovery, like, so like they're with me just to stay off drink, to stay off drugs and all. So it's, yeah, it's great. I love it. Like, I wouldn't change it for the world.
And that's so relatable. It's so relatable. And you know, a lot of people keep popping up on my TikTok as well, people who've overcome addiction and like they're into the gym and exercise now because they're getting that same euphoric feeling, but this time it's actually improving their life and benefiting them and their friends and family.
Yeah, and it's a feeling that lasts forever as well if you just keep doing it, you know.
And it's free as well. Well, I know you have to pay a monthly membership, but like,
yeah. It's a lot cheaper than a bag of coke.
Yeah. But look, thanks so much, Dave. I've loved having you on. I really hope this podcast has helped someone, whether they know someone who's in active addiction or they are themselves, or, you know, it just helps them from a mindset point of view. But I really hope that people have benefited from this. And thanks for sharing your story, because again, it's really, really personal. And I do appreciate coming on and giving me listeners an insight into that.
No problem. Thanks very much for having me on. Absolute pleasure.